You're listening to the Witness History Podcast from the BBC World Service with me, Vincent Dowd. When the first Mary Poppins book came out in 1934, the central character quickly became a favourite with young readers. Now a new Walt Disney film, Mary Poppins Returns, is introducing the fictional nanny to a new generation. The woman who created Mary Poppins was the enigmatic P.L. Travers. I've been talking to two people who knew her.
Now when you're stuck in the mist, sure you can struggle and resist, or you can trip a little like fantastic with me.
Since the first Mary Poppins film in 1964, it's been the Disney version of Mary and the characters around her most children know, a fact her creator could never quite accept.
What did you think of the film?
Oh, now you're asking me a very difficult and delicate question. I wept when I saw it. I thought, oh, what have I done? When I saw that name coming up, Mary Poppins, I thought, what have I done? And you must admit, it's not very like the books.
And if you're deep inside a tunnel...
Making the second Mary Poppins film, 54 years later, Disney no longer had to work with an author openly critical of how they'd treated her story. Pamela Lyndon Travers, born Helen Gough in Australia in 1899, always knew her mind. She came to London to become an actress in the mid-1920s. Gradually, she shifted towards writing, though many details of her life remain obscure. Writer Brian Sibley met her in the early 1980s. At the first meeting, at her house in Chelsea, she was characteristically keen to show who was boss.
And I arrived 3 or 4 minutes early. I rang the doorbell and nothing happened, and I rang it again. And then an upper window opened and a head popped out and a voice said, yes. And I said, I'm Brian Sibley. I'm here to see P.L. Travers. You're early, said the voice, and shut the window.
In fact, P.L. Travers and Brian Sibley became firm friends, but he says it could be hard to relax with her totally.
She held you with her gaze in a way which was slightly disconcerting. She wore flouncy frocks and outfits, big heavy necklaces that were kind of jade or something clunky. Her whole demeanour was, of course, exactly like Mary Poppins, in that she was slightly brusque. She certainly didn't tolerate fools gladly, and she was never an answerer, but endlessly a questioner.
Would she give you straight answers to straight questions?
Never.
There were eventually 8 Mary Poppins books about the adventures of the Banks children after their new nanny mysteriously arrives at their home, 17 Cherry Tree Lane.
If you want to find Cherry Tree Lane, all you have to do is ask the policeman at the crossroads. He will push his helmet slightly to one side, scratch his head thoughtfully, and then he will point his huge white-gloved finger and say, first you're right, second you're left, sharp right again, and you're there. Good morning.
P.L. Travers never married, but in 1939 she adopted as a baby Camillus Hone, who'd been born in Ireland. His daughter, Kitty Travers, saw her grandmother almost every week when she was a child.
We grew up in Twickenham in the suburbs, and every Sunday we had to drive down to Chelsea and have tea with her, and she'd take us to Cafe Picasso on the King's Road, and we'd be able to choose ice cream sundaes from the slightly greasy menu. Sometimes we'd go back to her house on Shawfield Street and have strange teas there. I think she was a really early enthusiast of wheatgrass juice. She might have had cups of wheatgrass juice. She often had quite strange diets and maybe some lightly poached brains on a tea tray on her lap.
Kitty Travers says the house in Chelsea reflected her grandmother's spiritual beliefs, influenced by Eastern religions.
It was very serene and zen-like in its design. It was very white-walled, and she had a Buddha in her study upstairs. She had a, you can imagine, quite a good children's library. So every time we visited her, I'd be given a book, and then she wanted me to review it for her. But I think she quite enjoyed it when I didn't like the books I was reading. And I think she took a little bit of pleasure in me not enjoying other children's literature. She used to wear these amazing, I think they're called muumuus, these long cotton Indian printed dresses, draped with this silver and turquoise jewellery that had been given to her by well, an Indian tribe she lived with post-war in America. And she absolutely wasn't friendly or huggy or in the way that you might imagine a granny to be. She was quite regal. She would sit in her chair and you sort of got presented to her one by one to give her a kiss, which we all dreaded doing because she kissed you on the lips.
P.L. Travers allowed Brian Sibley a glimpse into her inner life, but she rejected any question she regarded as banal.
I said to her, had she ever known in her life somebody like Mary Poppins? And she immediately replied, well, did you ever know anybody who could slide up the banisters? Those were the kind of conversations you had with her. She was enigmatic, incredibly enigmatic. There was an element of performance in everything that she did and everything that she said. But one element of it always remained the same. As an inquirer, somebody who looked for answers to, well, the whole mystery of the world, why people were what they are. And if you wanted to be a friend of hers, you had to be someone who had that quest for knowledge, for understanding, for wisdom.
As a young woman, P.L. Travers had fallen in love with Celtic mysticism. Later, she regarded the Armenian-born spiritual teacher Gurdjieff as a guru. Kitty Travers saw those beliefs in action when, at 16, she moved into her grandmother's house in London.
I moved out of my house and went and lived in her upstairs study room with the Buddha in the corner. She had these amazing candy-striped curtains that were so Mary Poppins, but we just spoke very little. I went off to college every day and then came back to my room and I didn't spend any time talking to her at all. Strangely, I would let myself in and go upstairs to my room and be aware of her having her meetings with her Gurdjieff followers, and there would be a group of people sitting on her carpet, sort of around her hemline, gazing up at her. I think she enjoyed that. I don't think she got what she needed from a chaotic family. Our relationship with her was quite different, I think.
When P.L. Travers died in 1996, the obituaries concentrated on the Mary Poppins books and on the 1964 Disney film, which she disliked. Her other books were almost entirely ignored. Since her death, P.L. Travers has been portrayed as a woman who was tough and could even be cold. Brian Sibley doesn't agree.
She liked to keep people slightly at arm's length. She had to be in control of the circumstances around her and the people with whom she communicated. Many times since her death, I've pondered on what my relationship with her was. I think that eventually there came a point when I would say that I actually loved her as a person. She was someone whom I considered to have a warm and strong relationship with. But I was always aware of the fact that I was actually unaware of so much about her. There had to be a point at which you took the step and thought, I'm going to try and embrace you as a person. Of course, in many ways, I wish that I could have penetrated some of those dark recesses of her life, answered all those psychological questions. But on another level, I don't care, because she was first and foremost a questioner, and she taught me to question and to look for answers. So when she asked me, did you ever know anybody like Mary Poppins? Of course, the answer I should have given was yes, and it's you.
The writer Brian Sibley, remembering his friend P.L. Travers.
Dear Santa, it's Tim Harford here from the 50 Things That Made the Modern Economy podcast. What I'd really like for Christmas is a new season of 50 Things. But if you can't fit all of that on your sleigh, how about a special one-off episode to keep us going? I'd really like an exploding myth. Maybe that one about you wearing red and white to advertise a well-known soft drink. And some stories. I really like stories, like the one about how people ended up giving presents to each other in the first place and the impact that you've had on the world economy. Oh, also, I'd like an orange and a walnut. A festive gift from the BBC World Service. Join me for a special episode of 50 Things That Made the Modern Economy, especially for the holiday season. And if you haven't already subscribed, hop over to our feed right now and you'll be ready for 50 more things when our second season launches in 2019.